Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello. Happy holidays and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be talking about a subject that all of us have had to battle with at one time or another. And what is that going to be? That's insomnia. And boy, I bet with the holidays and so many of you getting prepared for so many different activities, and you're going to have a whole house full of people maybe that you're going to be fixing dinner for, and you've just got family and friends and church and all kinds of things going on, and you go, I just am exhausted. Well, we've got a guest today, Sandra Kornblatt, who has a wonderful publication regarding the benefits of sleep, and it's called Restful Insomnia. Sandra, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, it's really perhaps a unique subject for this time of the year for someone to want to talk about, but man alive, just about everybody I meet will say, I am so exhausted, I just can hardly keep myself going on track. They just feel like they're burning out because of so much of the stress that comes along with the holidays. They're not sleeping well, they're anxious. Why is it that this was a subject that became so important to you that you found you had to write a book about it?
Well, you know, I had chronic insomnia for almost a year, where I woke up just about every night between 3 and 5 in the morning. I tried everything I could think of to cure it, from herbs to minerals to lots of things. I'm pretty sensitive to drugs, and nothing worked. So what I did was started to look at the night as those hours, as time for myself, and I found ways as I explored myself in insomnia to create a deeply restful time even though I wasn't sleeping. It's what I call mimicking the benefits of sleep. And a lot of people wanted to know how I did it, so I wrote a book about it.
Well, insomnia is something that I think just about everybody suffers from at one time or another. It can be stress-induced. Sometimes it's chemical changes. Women, especially, have a challenge with this. Guys do, too, but holy Moses, when that blessed period of menopause hits, we all go, give me a break. You're either waking up dripping or it's just like your whole body goes wacko. So you're in this, and you reach, like you said, this point where instead of hating the insomnia, you started using it. And that is something that really is significant. Tell us what it was that made you aware how one can get a good night's rest, even though you may have these awakening moments.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I did was when I started to have some time to myself, I started to notice those things that I did that made me dreamy. You know, those almost sleepy kind of things, and what I did that made me feel really alert and wakeful. And what I started to look at was what I call my conscious mind and unconscious mind. The conscious mind to me is that the holiday shopper, you know, you got to get going, driving the bus, has errands, solves problems, creates problems, has things to do. And the unconscious mind is what processes who you are, processes your dreams, your thoughts, your history. And so I started to play with, since I had hours each night, I had nothing else to do, I started to play with what would lead me more to the unconscious mind, and what would take it away. You know, so there's certain things about doing with my body, certain things with my eyes, and looking at different relationship to thoughts, because what I realized was I could get, you might have experienced this, where you get really, really sleepy and relaxed, and then you think, I wonder how many hours of sleep I'm going to get. I better go to sleep now. And your whole body goes, boing! You know, you're wide awake.
Absolutely.
So I started to play with those.
I like it, especially when, gee, did I set the alarm?
Mm-hmm. That'll wake you right up.
You go bong.
Yep.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I've had those moments. Well, I really enjoyed one of your observations of yourself, and I'm just going to read it right from your book because you just made a comment about it. You said, "My body, I know I have one. Inhale. You noticed how your stomach clenched, your teeth locked, your hands curled, then you had to exhale. You said your tension around your heart loosened a millimeter. There was a little space around the rage because you were upset. Your body sensations kept shifting and moving. You felt like you were watching an anger aquarium in your body." And I thought, oh, I like that description. It's a little fishy, but it works.
Yeah, well, that's a good joke. You know, that was a really interesting piece for me, which was noticing my body even when I was full of emotions and rage, and how that did create a distance, and I could rest while I was upset, and then learn how to just let the upset move its natural way in the body, and change and turn into tears or turn into letting go for the night or turn into a solution that I could let go of. So it was a real interesting piece to step back from the intensity of emotions and just watch and be in the body.
Now, I want my listeners, Sandra, to know that you're a health and science writer. You're in the Seattle area. You've written other books, A Better Brain at Any Age and 365 Energy Boosters. And this, you started to develop this program in the year 2000.
Yeah.
And what is one of your most successful cases that you've had or persons that have had some real challenges? And would you describe this person as being an A personality, or, you know, what they call a type A and a type B? Do you find most people that have insomnia are more the high achiever type?
You know, I don't think so. I think that when anybody has insomnia, they suffer in general, because I think we don't know how to deal with it, and everybody has a list of things to do. Do you know any type Bs who don't have a list of things to do?
I don't know.
You know,
I haven't
they might be more mellow about it, but everybody has a lot of things to do. And I think what happens is, and this is true for all, pretty much all of my clients, is that we get really caught up in the thoughts and the list, and think that when we're done the list, then we can relax.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that gets triggered at night, it can really make a difference. One of the basic things that I've started to teach everybody is, you know, to create an environment that feels like it's night, because we have so many lights around us all the time that we don't have the natural reaction that we would to dusk, which is to increase the melatonin, to slow down. So, you know, one of the pieces is creating darkness in your house, creating, you know, maybe taking the TV out of the bedroom, creating a place where you really do start to feel dark and quiet and rested. And that's a big deal,
mm-hmm,
for some people.
It is, and you make a number of very good comments that watching television, especially before you go to bed,
mm-hmm,
depending on what you watch, and this has happened to me, sometimes later in the evening, and I'm typically not a late night person, but sometimes later in the evening, there are really good programs that can be on,
right.
But my goodness, by the time you get watching them, your mind is going 10,000 miles an hour. So if you can record those, if you know something's coming on real late at night that you just really want to watch, if you can record it and then watch it another time, that's really good. But I don't know about other people, but sometimes I get into these things that they are so intellectually stimulating that there's no way you can just go to bed. Your mind's going 10,000 miles an hour.
And your mind is also distracted. I mean, TV. They did a research in Japan that computer games caused insomnia, and their theory was that, you know, some of it was the lights and the movement and the tension. You know, because,
mm-hmm,
oftentimes TV shows create a certain level of tension. It could be intellectual tension. It could be trying to figure out who killed, you know, the person in the law, you know, on the TV show. Those get you charged, and they,
mm-hmm,
make it harder to let go, which, you know, we need to let go. That's part of being human. And in a go-go-go society, we need to look at ways that we can let go when our body doesn't naturally want to do it. We, you know, create ways that it'll happen.
I find, and my listeners I know have heard me say this more than once, that in today's world, there seems to be such a pace, and it doesn't make any difference what generation you talk to, whether it's the younger generation or the older generation. It is very rare anymore that I encounter someone that says, I'm so bored, I have nothing to do. It's just the opposite. In fact, there's a sense of frustration. My goodness, if I don't stay up until 2 in the morning to do everything, I know I've been guilty of it, then it's never going to get done. And then the next day you're dragging like you're dead meat. And this is just, this is a pace. And I think what you're talking about here is appropriate. It fits in with this. We don't allow downtime.
Nope.
We don't make it okay just to sit down, shut up, do nothing, close our eyes, take a nap, do something like this. Really is hard.
It is, especially in this society. And then we get so identified. I'm one of these people who get identified with what I need to get done. Mm-hmm. And when I can't get it done, I think, well, you know, who am I? How can I be okay? And there is a deeper level of who we are that doesn't have anything to do with what we get done, which doesn't mean that that's not important. It just means that we also need to recognize there's many levels of reality operating at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to be able to move into a deeper place, you can find the values of why you want to get done what you want to get done and choose from a deep value place rather than that head sort of manic, gerbil in a cage kind of place.
I agree. Now, I loved the fact that you have a chapter on focusing on the gifts of insomnia, because so often we will look at it as a negative, but it could be a time where maybe you're able to read something special or you're able to put your mind into a space without interruption.
Yep.
Because everything's quiet around you. There's just a lot that goes on, and lots of times people get more creative during those moments when they least expect it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, in fact, that's where the restful insomnia started for me, is I was, during the day, complaining about not having time to myself. And then I realized I did have time to myself. It was just 12 hours later than I wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
It was at night. So, you know, that's when I got to do a lot of the things like practicing. Therapists might say, you know, practice talking nicely to yourself, and you get so busy you forget about it. Well, that was a time I could practice that and see what it felt like and what that experience was. And practice, as we mentioned, looking at my emotions instead of diving into them. And being creative. I think the key thing about being creative, creativity is a whole fascinating piece in terms of sometimes we feel it's a gift, sometimes we feel like we have to do something with it right away. And so it's an interesting thing to have that creativity and watch it and see it emerge and maybe use a book light or something to keep it dark to write down what you need to write down. But again, you don't have to always be productive to have that sense of being part of the world and being part of creation.
Mm-hmm. I like your statement about white noise. This is something that I have found was very useful for me. I especially just love the sound of a fan. That sounds really crazy, but I'll turn a fan on and it is that hum. Now, it drives my husband nuts. He's just the opposite of me. He doesn't like that. But for me, it allows me to shift into that altered state of mind. And especially during the summer months, I find that it's just very good. But it does something that just creates that in-between space that you need for relaxation. And also music does the same thing. What made your awareness work when it came to using white sounds?
Well, you know, my theory about it, one piece about white sound is that it reduces the contrast of noise, because oftentimes what wakes you up is two pieces. One is the noise, and the other is the change so much from the quiet to the loud, and it's kind of like having a gray sheet of paper and drawing on it rather than a white sheet. You know, you might hear the noise, but it won't be so invasive. The other piece that I thought was interesting is looking at what the CDs were. There's a lot of CDs of white noise out there. There's CDs of vacuum cleaners and fans and heaters, and there's also a lot of CDs for babies. And what I realized is that white noise is very similar to the sound we hear in utero. You hear the blood rushing, you know, the and the heart beating, but even the sounds are kind of muffled. So I think it reminds us of being, you know, before we were born, that sense of being held and just protected from the world. So I think there's some deep memories for some people. And then, you know, your husband and my mother, neither one likes white noise, and, you know, that's also makes sense for other people.
Mm-hmm. I got a kick out of one of your clients named Victoria. She said she hated the wacky thoughts that would pop into her head every time she started to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. Something like a knitted mustard green planet, Jupiter rotates around a plastic Rockefeller Center.
That
is going to keep everybody awake.
Do you ever have that feeling?
Yeah.
You know, where you have a strange thought and you like wake yourself up trying to figure out what the heck you were thinking about? She would do
right.
that all the time.
Right. And one of the things that sometimes I try to do is get a great big sweep broom in my head. That's a visualization technique that sometimes I use. And I'll find all of these thoughts running across my mind screen, and I'll just get out the big broom and push them to the side.
Yep.
You know, whatever works. We all have our own little idiosyncrasies, and sometimes something will work one time and it won't work another. And that's okay, but meditation, I think, is absolutely wonderful, and you bring that in. And how would someone would say, well, my goodness, if I can't sleep, isn't it more important that I get my sleep? How can someone incorporate the meditation into that moment so that they're not stressing themselves out?
Well, you know, you mentioned having a lot of things to do, and that's one of the reasons that there's a lot of different techniques in the book for people to figure out what works for them. And one of the things that works often is meditation, but meditation and restful insomnia is different than sitting in a chair and focusing on your breath. When you're regularly meditating, you want to notice, you know, you want to notice your thoughts and you want to notice if you're feeling sleepy instead of moving into sleepiness. But with restful insomnia, you're noticing your thoughts and just watching them without being so identified with them. And that's really key at night. You know, you've heard of the restless mind, and that's often what keeps people up because we get so identified with, and what I mean is the identified with their thoughts. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you think you've got to wash the dishes tomorrow, or you know, or do the laundry, you might in your mind mentally, you know, make a pile and make a list and figure out how you're going to do it, when you're going to fit it in, and, you know, all those other kinds of pieces, which is a different thing than just noticing, yeah, I have to do the laundry tomorrow, and now I'm going to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, it would fit in between picking up the kids and making dinner, and that's fine. That'll happen when it happens, and now I have to breathe. So that's the way of using meditation to just get a little distance from the conscious mind, which, you know, I think is a little bit of a bully, to tell you the truth. So we need to, you know, have a different alternative than just following its demands.
I like that. I had a friend once say to me, when it comes to housekeeping, and just about everybody around can relate to this, she said, you know, Donna, and she's in her 60s, she said, don't worry about the dust. If you have anybody over that's my age, I can't see very well anyway, and I guarantee you it's going to stay there. In fact, once you get rid of it, it's going to have a chance to revisit you. And I said, please don't remind me.
<That's>
<true. laughs> We go through these things. But honestly, there is that desire. And here we are in the holidays. My goodness, we want to spend time with friends. And if you're hosting a party or if you're doing something. I met one woman that just amazed me because I asked her, what are you doing for the holidays? And usually somebody has, you know, a list of 550,000 things that they've got to do. And she said, not squat. And I said, excuse me? She said, nope, don't do it anymore. Did it for a lot of years. Stop bothering with it anymore. If somebody invites me over, that's great. but I'm not going to worry about it. So she uses it as a time just to relax. She's been able to totally detach in her own way from the hustle and bustle. And this is a mature woman in her middle 60s, and she said, I've been there, done that, found I didn't want to do it anymore. Now, not everybody's going to be able to do that. But
no, but she's
a
good role model.
Yeah, oh, she's a wonderful role model. I mean, it's just really something where she said, I don't need to take on what I really don't want to take on. And she's taken that positioning. Now, one of the things that I found fascinating in your book was your energy psychology section that you have in it. And you talk about TAT, which is a tapas acupuncture technique. I found this most interesting. Tell us about this, because I think this could really help my listeners, and I was thinking even of myself, to consciously remember to do something like this can really make a shift. Why does it work?
It can. There's a lot of people who looked at acupressure and how it relates to releasing emotions and developed different techniques. TAT, TAT is one of them. And I like it because you put a hand on your forehead and a hand at the back of your head, and you position your hand, and I'll explain that in a minute. But there's a way, you know, when you were little and your mom or your dad would hold your head when you were sad?
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you a sense, or gives me a sense for sure, of being contained and having something around me when I'm moving through my feelings and feeling sad. So there's a very simple way, which is not quite TAT, but it works, which is literally to put a hand at the top of your neck and the back of your head, your occipital ridge, and then you put another hand on your forehead. So when you do both of those things, it feels very soothing, and that's a really good way to actually wallow in your feelings, because really oftentimes we're feeling our feelings, but we're also skirting around them, and when you move through them, you come to a new place. And the TAT piece is you put the hand in the back of your neck, and then you put your fingers around the bridge of your nose so that you put your thumb and your ring finger on the bridge of your nose right near your eyes, you know, where it's very, very narrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put your middle finger in the middle of your forehead. And you do that, and then you give yourself a few minutes to just make the feelings as intense as possible. And again, people need to understand how they are with their own emotions. If they feel like that's going to overwhelm them, they might do it, you know, with somebody else or at a therapist's office. But if they feel like they just need a good cry, it's a great way to do that and to really get a sense of what the emotion is there for, what the lessons are in it.
Now, EFT and TFT,
mm-hmm.
this is thought field therapy, or the Callahan technique. This was developed by Dr. Callahan in the late 1980s, and this was expanded upon by Gary Craig, and that is where the EFT comes in. And I met someone, oh my goodness, has to have been a couple of years ago, at the SeaTac airport who had really felt this had just turned her around. In fact, she had lost a lot of weight, released it, because her stresses were expressed through eating. And she found that the tapping technique really, really helped her. Tell us about this technique.
Well, it's a little hard to explain on the phone, but it's very effective. And basically, you're tapping on different parts, for instance, the inner corners of your eyebrows, underneath your eyes on your cheekbones, the middle of your chin, where your liver is, under your arms. So there's a different pattern that you move through, and it's like sort of running meridian patterns are in acupressure and acupuncture that run in your body that are flows of energy. So basically what you're doing is you're tapping on different parts of that flow of energy to move the emotions and release them. You know, when you're feeling angry, how you get kind of rigid in your neck and your jaw. And when you're feeling sad and you don't really want to cry, your eyes get kind of tense. Well, this kind of moves some of those pieces out so that you might not even have a good cry. It might just release the feeling of it while you're experiencing, while you're tapping on these different points. I found it very useful. And I found it useful to know that basically I wasn't alone with my emotions. I had a way that I could walk myself through them.
Mm-hmm. Now, writing wisdom, this goes a little bit back to what we were talking about earlier about writing things out.
Mm-hmm.
Writing, for me, has been a very useful tool. What do you feel about it?
I think writing is great. I think that it really can help, you know, you let go. But one of the things I discovered when I was developing the program was that there were certain ways of writing that made the story more intense. So if I was mad at a friend who, you know, didn't meet me at a certain time when I thought she should, but I didn't say anything, I could sit and write about how I didn't like her and what she did and why she thought about me that way and why she didn't care. And that would really just kind of escalate the problem. So what I looked at was a different way of writing, wisdom writing, that allows you to draw on your deeper self and in bullet points say what the issue is. In kind of little bullet point writing, you also say, you know, what your lessons are, and you look at having a good spiritual energy, which I call good parent energy, that also helps give you a sense of who you are and how you can address the problem. So it's actually a few simple steps, and it's been very helpful in terms of, again, changing writing from just the story and the thoughts into something that that can change your perspective on things.
Now, my guest today has been Sandra Kornblatt. Her wonderful book is Restful Insomnia, How to Get the Benefits of Sleep Even When You Can't. And all of us experience it. So she gives you so many variables that when you're reading it, it'll give you a chance to weigh and measure, examine, what could you try? What is it that's going to enable you to make your insomnia a friend, not an enemy? And actually, maybe even relieve yourself from that discomfort. Now, Sandra, do you have a website that people can go to?
I do. It's www.restfulinsomnia.com. And I have a newsletter and a small little booklet that people can get for signing up for the newsletter. And, you know, the other piece I want to put out is that oftentimes restful insomnia will help you sleep. It can often be a pathway there, but that's useful to look at as a secondary pleasure. Again, because if you focus on that, you might get lost, but it can be a useful technique in that way as well.
Well, I think sleep is something that many of us don't get enough of, and that in our busy world and on our intense pace, knowing that we've got some tools that we can work with can really empower us. All of the energy techniques you mentioned and the various opportunities to explore to enable us to become more refreshed and more at peace with who we are as people, I think is really good. So Sandra Kornblatt's book, Restful Insomnia. This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget her website, restfulinsomnia.com. Donna Sebo here. Thank you, Sandra, again for being my guest. We are going to go to a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Thank you.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, this is Donna. I'm sure you've got a busy schedule and you're hustling and bustling and just getting everything ready for the holidays. Boy, it just goes by so fast. Hard to believe. We've only got a couple of days and Christmas is going to be here. Well, if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little of intuitive insight, here is the telephone number to call in to 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, if you're a first-time listener, I'm delighted that you're able to join us today. All I want from you is your first name or your initial. Of course, I'd love to know where you're calling in from. And then I will give you a reading on the air. And after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Now, if I have time today, I've got this wonderful recipe. I just came across this. If you're like me and you enjoy cooking, once in a while when you're having a house full of guests, like I'm having a house full of guests, and this year some of my guests are vegans. And so I have people that like meat and I have other people like chicken and then I have other people, you know, that they don't eat any of that. They just eat vegetables. And so I was trying to figure out what could I fix? Because there are certain standbys that you always enjoy having around holidays, but I like having something different with the holiday season, because usually we fix a traditional English dinner. And what you might ask that might be, well, it's prime rib and it's homemade Yorkshire pudding. I have my own special way of doing it, and it's got all kinds of seasoning in it. And then I've got a special southern dish that's made with kale and sweet potatoes and onions and spicy sausage. And, you know, I have all of these things. So I've got to fix some different dishes this year because of the food preferences of my guests. Well, I came across this wonderful recipe that any vegan would just love. It's apple glazed roasted vegetables. So have your pad of paper handy. And when I get a chance, I'm going to share it with you because this is so good. Kids will like it, and you can adapt the vegetables in it if you like. But it's something you'd want to fix more than once because, one, it's easy, and two, it's going to be very, very tasty, even with the kids that might be coming over. So that's that. Let's go to our first caller for the day and show you how you can be a part of the show if you so desire. This is Donna. Welcome. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Stephanie, calling from Tucson.
Hi, Stephanie. Is it nice, warm, and toasty in Tucson?
A little bit on the chilly side.
Okay. I thought Arizona was supposed to be warm this time of the year.
Probably warmer than where you're at. You're a little colder area, I think.
That's true. But we have, right now, we've got blue skies and sunshine, and if we didn't know better, we'd think it was about 70 degrees outside. Of course it isn't, but we like to imagine it to be that way. Let's get down to business with you, Stephanie. First thing that I am observing here is a lot of writing. And I would like to encourage you to have some downtime before January 1. The reason being is you need to be out and away from the busyness of everything that's around you to really streamline your focus. there has been a lot of pulling on you mentally and emotionally during the last 2 weeks. And you're coming very close to the end of a very intensive cycle that is going to be welcome. I mean, you're really going to welcome the shift. However, you're still in the latter process of this intensity, and you cannot drop the ball. You need to maintain your focus. You need to be alert. You need to be aware so that you're going to get things done the way you want them done. So take some time. And again, I'll say streamline your mental track of attention and really get down to the bare bones. Really get down to the nitty-gritty, because I think there's going to need to be a time commitment to a particular project. And if you had to go to a local McDonald's or a Starbucks or some place where you could just isolate yourself totally, maybe it's a library, some place where you're not going to have anybody calling you on the phone, where you're not going to be interrupted by anybody, you will be left to your own devices and to your own thinking processes. This is a discipline that you must do. And I feel like the first week in the new year is going to be requiring a lot of this intensity so that you can pull up some loose ends, knot them, and keep them in place the way that they should be. So you've got a lot of work that you're going to need to really be focused with. And nobody's going to be able to do this for you. You have to do it for yourself. And once you have that kind of focus, you're usually surprised at how much you get done. So I think it's concentrated attention. Those are the two words that I'd emphasize. Concentrated attention. What would you like to ask me, Stephanie?
Oh, thank you. I'm just writing all this down. I am finding that there's some complication coming up on the 25th, and I'm wondering if you have a sense that I'll be able to navigate that without hurting anyone's feelings.
What's the complication? That's Christmas Day. So what have you got, 14 different dinner invitations, and you've got to make them all?
Almost. Yeah, it's almost like that. And I'm going to have to leave someone out for a few hours, and I...
Oh, I don't think. What you need to do is just really sit down and look at the commitments that you've made. And I would say, look at your priorities. If there is a family that you're going to want to spend time with, if you have been invited to different environments, you need to look at what your schedule is like and then call the people and tell them that you'll be able to come in for a certain amount of time, and then we'll need to leave at a certain time and just say, I do have this commitment. We just got a call from a friend that was going to be coming and spending time with us, and they found that they had another commitment that had to be met. That was fine with us. We didn't know. I think one thing you have to remember is that when someone is hosting a gathering, if they are really into what they're doing, they always appreciate the thoughtfulness of someone saying, I'm sorry, but I can't get there until 7 o'clock. Or I am not going to be able to make it. It's just I have found that this is not going to work. But let's get together, you know, maybe next week or something like this. Understand that courtesy is the biggest thing. And remembering that those people that have invited you really like you, really care for you, and want you to be a part of their life. And it's not a matter, you're not going to hurt their feelings if you tell them the truth. You don't need to go into a lot of details, but just say, circumstances have come up. I'm just not going to be able to make it. I'd still like to get together with you. How about next Tuesday or Wednesday? Whatever you work, you know, whenever you work it out. You figure that out.
Okay.
And if nothing else, get some thoughtful little gift for them and send them a nice little note saying, I'm so sorry I couldn't make it. Please know that I appreciate the invitation, and perhaps next year. Or something like this. Thoughtfulness is always appreciated. And life happens, for heaven's sakes. Nothing's perfect in this world. Does that help you?
It does.
Because Christmas is a day that should be enjoyed. You shouldn't feel like you have to be in rollerblades and have jet propulsion on your automobile to go from point A to point two to B, C, D, E, F, G.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you.
You are welcome, and a wonderful holiday weekend to you.
You too. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Okay. I was telling you I had this recipe for apple glazed roasted vegetables. And if you're like me and you're going to have some vegans in your house, now maybe you've got some other recipes that are just wonderful, of which I have no doubt. But this one I really liked, so I wanted to share it with you. Now, this is what you're going to need. You're going to need a pound of carrots. Now, remember, when I give you these ingredients, you may or may not like them, but you can substitute some other vegetables. So the choice is yours. But this is how the recipe reads. A pound of carrots, of course, you clean them, and you want to diagonally cut into about a quarter-inch thick slices. You're going to need about 2.5 cups. And then a pound of parsnips, cut them the same way. And if you've never had parsnips, they're wonderful. They're sort of sweety in texture. They really go well with carrots. And then you're going to need 2 pounds of small red potatoes, and you want to quarter them. It's going to be about 6 cups. And then a cup of frozen pearl onions thawed. And you can get those in naturally in your frozen food section. You're going to need some apple jelly, of which about 1/2 cup you're going to want for this recipe. Now, this you can use some white wine with it or water, whatever you prefer. You're going to need 1/3 cup of that, 3 tablespoons of butter, 3/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of pepper, and then some fresh parsley, which makes a very nice garnish. Now, this is how simple this is. You want to put a rack in your oven on the lower third section, and you want your oven to be preheated to 350 degrees. And then you want, if you want to do this, you can do this. You can take some 1-inch star-shaped cutters and cut out stars from your larger carrot sections and parsnip slices, if you want to do that. I don't know that I would, because it's all time. But it's up to you. There's a lot of different ways that you could do this. But you combine your cutouts and your scraps with your potatoes, your onions, and remaining carrot and parsnip slices. It just gives that little bit of extra creative touch. Now, in a microwave-safe bowl, you want to combine your jelly, your wine, and your butter, and you can nuke it in the microwave for about 15 seconds. If you don't use a microwave, just warm it up in a little saucepan on the top of your stove. Now, you want to reserve, after you've got the mixture of the wine, the jelly, and the butter, or the water, jelly, and butter, you also might want to try to substitute in some apple juice or apple cider for the liquid. Just a thought. You want to reserve 2 tablespoons of this mixture, and then what you've got there, you pour over your vegetables. And you add your salt and pepper, you toss until it's evenly coated, spread it in a single layer on a jelly roll pan, and then you want to roast it for 30 minutes on your lower oven rack. And you stir it, and you roast until everything is tender and nice and golden brown in color. It's going to take about 40 minutes. Then you put it in your serving bowl, and with that 2 tablespoons of jelly mixture you've got left over, you can just toss it with that and then sprinkle a little bit of parsley on it, and there it is. So you've got something here that kids are going to like because it has the sweetness of the apple to it. And this is just something that is so easy, and if you're roasting a turkey or if you're doing something else and you have that bottom rack, you can put your vegetables in there while you're roasting something else for your dinner. But I just think it is tasty, it's flavorful. It's a simple enough recipe where if you substitute, it's going to be very easy and very attractively colorful to serve. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Remember, you can call in and chat at 888-815-9756.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age.
Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Now, I do want to let you know, tomorrow we're going to be talking about instant healing with Barbara Semple. This is a topic that always is fascinating to me, and I hope that you will enjoy it as much as I do. There are so many techniques for healing, for self-healing, for working with distant healing, and I've had the wonderful experience of interacting with different modalities, and they all have merit. And I think the more we can talk about this, the more we can discuss these different aspects of capability of doing something like this, it can make such a difference in the world. So Barbara's going to be my guest tomorrow. And then on Thursday, it's the day before Christmas, and I'm going to be sharing all kinds of stories with you. I've been sent such wonderful stories by different people, and I want to share them with you. So it'll be an open mic hour for the day before Christmas. And then on Christmas Day, I have a special that I play each year, because there's all kinds of Christmas stories. It's a wonderful thing to have in the background, and if you have to work on Christmas Day, just listen to these wonderful stories, and so the phone lines will not be open. I'm going to be with my family and friends. We have a huge get-together that we're going to be doing, so that Friday it will be a pre-recorded, or the pre-recorded broadcast. So I just wanted to let you know about it. Now, I wanted to share a story with you today that is called A Family Christmas, and this is a true story. It is by Linda Brown, and I think it's always good to hear what other people go through. The holidays bring their own special environment with them, and she said, it took a lot of footwork, quite a few angels, and God's divine guidance to get me to where I am today. On December 12th, I will have been clean and sober for over 10 years and off government aid for well over 6 years. The results of my previous actions had left my two children and me homeless. Many years ago, after being homeless for 1 month, I was living in student housing. It was an old military barrack where the owner, who she describes as an angel, would let students and a few others who were homeless live. My children at the time were 3 and 7. At Christmas, I wanted to give them a memorable celebration, but my income consisted of $295 in aid for dependent children and food stamps. My rent, with utilities, came to $249 a month, leaving me with only $50 for gas, laundry, and supplies. I washed my clothes in the bathtub and hung them out on guardrails or on hangers in the apartment. Needless to say, I could not afford Christmas gifts. I knew I had to be creative. I was in school taking courses in computers and was able to work with Christmas graphics and print them out in black and white. I made a coloring book for each of my children. I also started what is still a tradition in my family, making a wish book. We saved old computer paper from the trash to create our wish books. The title on the books would read, "If I could give you anything, I would give you," and then you would write out what the gifts would be. The rest of the book would flow from whatever thought filled the blank. We went through old magazines, cut out pictures of what we wanted to give to the other person. Making paste from flour and water, we pasted the pictures on the empty pages. We added our own artwork with pencils, pen, and a few broken crayons. These books were wonderful. The first year I did this with my children, I received as a gift from my children a new car, a new house, and a new daddy, or should I say a husband, from my 3-year-old daughter. My 7-year-old son gave me lots and lots of money, a meal fit for a queen, new clothes, and a puppy. I still have those precious books, and every year we make new ones. A few years ago, the paper was fresh and brought in from the store, not saved from the recycled can. We used brand new colors and paints, not little broken pieces. We had real glue, not flour and water, but the most special books were the first ones we made because we truly created them and gave from the heart, since that's all we had to give. Now, wasn't that long ago, I ended up with having a new home, a brand new vehicle, money in the bank, new clothes, and a puppy. And they weren't pictures in a wish book. I was married to a wonderful man who has truly sent to me, and we have a meal made for royalty every holiday. Our new tradition now is that we find families in need. We buy little things like socks, toothbrushes, hairbrushes, cologne, and food for Christmas dinner. We sneak up to the family's front door, leave the bags of goodies, and drive away. We have no intention of letting the family know who has given these gifts. We started with just one or two families, but last year we fed 75 people. I expect to feed well over 100 this year. Since the word has gotten out about what we are doing for Christmas dinners, others have stepped in to help. The only things we paid for last year were the yams and one of the turkeys. This tradition has been going on for a number of years now. You see, it was over 10 years ago I had a knock on my door at about 3 in the morning. I was sleeping on my couch, as I always did. When I heard the knock, I looked out my window, and there were grocery bags in the front of my door. Inside those bags were a few little gifts for my children and food for the complete Christmas dinner. I had no way to cook the dinner, as our apartment did not have a kitchen, so I cooked it at a non-profit organization that allowed me to use theirs. I invited a few people who I knew had no other family except for us, and a few homeless people also showed up. I still use this kitchen to make Christmas dinner for large groups of people. You don't have to be homeless or penniless to join. Loneliness is enough. Some of the folks are families who come for dinner, and others are people who have chosen us as their family. I've never considered myself an angel for doing these things, but I see more and more how angels have come into my life and how in return I've been encouraged to do things for others. I feel that I'm giving back what was so freely given to me. I will never know who gave my children and me the gifts over 10 years ago, but the greatest gift of all to me has been the gift of giving. Lydia Brown. All of us have an opportunity to give. All of us have an opportunity to share. How we do it, that's our choice, whatever way we want to do it in. But remember, there's an old adage, what goes around comes around. And Lydia did something that I think was very special. She said, my wish book that was generated by my children, their wishes for me have been fulfilled. And it's nice to know that I can fulfill other people's wishes, one of which is to not be alone. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so delighted you've been able to share your time with me today. Tomorrow we'll be talking about the gift of healing right here. Same time, same place. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.